And just let your senses move inwards. And as if you're moving in time and space, and you find yourself contemplating a figure, a warrior, a king, on the site of a great battlefield. And the battle is over. And the king, who is Merlin, is burying two brothers in a richly decorated chapel. And he is weeping. When he becomes overcome by grief, he tears his clothes, throws dust upon his hair, he lays prostrate upon the ground. The other princes and commanders who are with him offer comfort, but he does not take their comfort. For 3 days he weeps, refusing food. And we follow him by night as he escapes out of the camp, coming to a vast forest. This is the ancient forest Brosilande, the forest that is between the worlds, the forest that is in the world and between the worlds. Is the wildest of places. It is the place of green shadow. And as he passes under the shadow of the trees, his crown, his torque, his sword falls off from off his body. And he becomes a man of the woods, a green man, a man of the wilderness. Eating plants and grasses and fruit and blackberries. Hiding in the woods, discovered by none, forgetful of himself and his own. Lurking like a wild thing. And winter comes. And the nourishment of the wood vanishes. And he cries out, O Christ, God of heaven, what shall I do? What place is there on earth where I can live? There is nothing here to eat. No grass on the ground, no acorns on the tree. 19 were the apple trees, which once stood here with their fruit. They stand so no longer. Who has stolen them? Where have they gone? Now I see them, now not. Fate supports me and opposes me, letting me see, preventing me from seeing. The apples fail me, and all else besides. The forest is leafless, fruitless, a double affliction, no cover from leaves, no nourishment from fruit. Winter and rainstorms have taken them, everyone. I find turnips deep in the ground, hungry swine and greedy boars rush up and snatch the turnips from me. as they pull them out of the soil. My wolf, my dear companion, has been weakened. Harsh hunger has weakened you and me. You lived in these woods before me, and age has turned you grey. You have nothing, know not your next meal. All that is left to you is to fill the air with howling, your wasted frame sprawled flat on earth. A mist comes down, and the mist clears. And we find ourselves in a high place, a spring at the top of a mountain, surrounded by hazels and dense thorns. And from this place, the whole of the woodland can be seen. And we hear out of the heart of the thicket a question, a cry. O ruler of all, O ruler of all, how is it that seasons are not the same? Distinguished only by their four numbers. Spring now is bound by its laws to provide the leaves and the flowers. Summer gives us the crops and autumn the fruit. Then follows icy winter which devours and lays waste and brings the rain and snow. It suppresses everything and causes damage with its storms. It will not let the earth produce its multicolored flowers, nor the oaks their acorns, nor the apple trees their apples. Would there were no winter, no white frost. Would it were spring or summer, and the cuckoo back in song, and the nightingale who softens sadness, and the turtle dove keeping her chaste devotion. Would that the other birds were singing their harmonies in the fresh foliage, to delight me with warbling, while the earth refreshed with flowers, breathe its scent from under the green turf, and the springs run babbling all around, and the pigeon among the leaves keeps up its drowsy cooing and brings sleep. We hear the sound of a minstrel singing of Merlin's wife, Gwendolina. Oh, the deep moan of moaning Gwendolina, the piteous tears of weeping Gwendolina. I grieve for her dying in despair. No woman in Wales more beautiful, beyond goddesses in fairness, beyond the privet petal, the rose in bloom, beyond the lilies of the field. The splendour of spring shone in her alone. The beauty of the stars was held in her two eyes. Gold glittered in her glorious hair. All this has gone, gone the grace, the delicate bloom, the snowy splendor of her flesh. She is not what she once was, but worn with weeping. She knows not where the prince has gone, whether living still or dead. She lies sick with sorrow, faded in the dissolution of long grief. Ganeda is in tears by her side, complaining no less, mourning a lost brother, comfortless. One for a brother, one for a husband weeps. Their tears together flow, time in sadness passes. They eat not, sleep not, wander unrefreshed by night, through thorny ways, so great is the grief. As he hears the song, we see Merlin shaking himself, and the semblance of the wild man falls from off his brow and off his clothes. we see again the crown and the talk, and the shape of the king that he has been. And he follows the minstrel back to the city. The mist comes down, and we find ourselves in the city of Rhydderch. Greeted, and he is greeted by Gymida and Gwendolina, and the king welcomes the wanderer. The people of the city welcome his return. But as Merlin encounters the people, he becomes distressed, becomes deranged, becomes mad, and tries to run off into the forest. And he is held under guard. He is offered gifts. Gold and glittering gems and cups brought by Wayland in the city of Saguntium. But no gift will he wish apart from the return to Caledon. Take back your goods, King Rhydderch. My nut-rich forest of Caledon shall have me. I desire it above all else. The mist comes down, and the mist comes up, and in the midst of the city we see Merlin chained to a great ragged tree stump. And in one moment he is Merlin, and the next he is a bear. And the next one moment the tree stump is a ragged tree stump. The next, it is the living tree in the heart of the city. And as he stands in this place, being one moment the chained man, the wild man, or the king image has passed from him. But he is the winged, the wild man, and then he is the bear, and then he is the wild man, and then he is the bear. Rhydderch and Gymida walk towards him, talking together. And Merlin sees that in Gymida's hair there is a leaf. And he laughs, a laugh that cuts through all conversation. And he has access to him, I will let you go if you tell me why you laughed. And Merlin agrees, and the chains are cut off from him. And he says, the reason I laughed is that in one and the same act you earn both approval and disapproval. When just now you pulled out a leaf that the queen unknowingly had in her hair, you are more faithful to her than she had been to you when she crept into the undergrowth where her lover met her and lay with her. As she lay there, a leaf fallen by chance, caught in her loosened hair, you plucked it out unknowing. Rhydderch, hearing this, is filled with anger. he turned his face from her. But she, unperturbed, hides her shame behind a smile and addressed her husband thus. Why so gloomy, love? Why angry over this and so unjust? Why do you believe a lunatic who muddles lies and truth together because he is out of wits? Now watch, and if I am not mistaken, I shall prove he is talking nonsense and has not told the truth. The mist comes down and the mist comes up, and we find Merlin standing in the hall of the king, find Ganida and Riddach standing with him, and before them both there is a boy, a squire of the court. Ganida calls the boy over and asks her brother to predict the death the boy would die. Her brother said to her, "Dear sister, when he is a man, the lad will die by falling from a high rock." The queen smiled at this, and the boy goes away, changes his clothes and cuts off his long hair, returning, looking like a different person. The queen once more appealed to her brother. "My dear, tell your sister what the death of this one will be. When this boy grows up, he will meet a violent death in a tree through misjudgment." She whispered to the boy to go out, to dress himself in women's clothes, and to come back. He returns, dressed in women's clothing, looking like a girl. The queen says to Merlin, "Brother, tell me of the death of this girl." "Girl or not," said her brother to her, "she will die in a river." Merlin is now making to leave, having been discredited, to return to Caledon. He opened the gates to be open, but once again his sister stood in the way. And his wife Gwendolina appears. And Ganida says to him, "Here is Gwendolina dying for you here. What shall she do? Is she to remarry? Do you tell her to remain as a widow? She will go with you in the forest and will be happy to live in the green forest clearings, if only she can keep your love." To this speech the prophet replies, "I will remain clear of both of you and undestroyed by love. Let her have her chance of marriage and choose of her own accord whom she shall wed. But let the man who weds her take care. He never gets in my path or comes near me. Let him tread another road." The mist comes up, and the mist goes down, and we see Merlin wandering in the forest. And we see him sitting on a high hill, contemplating, seeing, looking deeply into the land, And so it is that he sees the boy whose death he prophesies, hunting with a pack of good dogs, chasing a stag. He spurred his horse in pursuit, coming up to a high hill ringed with rocks, with a river running across the plain at its foot. The stag crosses the hill and fled toward the river in search of cover. The young man presses on and takes a straight course over the mountains, looking for the stag among the scattered rocks. In his headlong course, the horse slips and went over a high precipice, and his rider plunges down the steep cliff slope into the river, falling in such a way that one foot caught in a tree and the rest of his body submerged in the flowing stream. So then he fell, he was drowned, he hung from a tree, and by his triple death proved the prophet true. Mist comes up and the mist comes down, and Merlin wanders the forest of Caledon. A wild man of the wood, wandering in his wits, contemplating the life of the wood, contemplating the appearance of toadstools, of nuts, of the small creatures of the forest, contemplating growth and death, learning the ways of the wood, that is the wood between the worlds, contemplating stone and tree and brook, flower and fruit, becoming more deeply centered in the life of the wood, entering the deep earth, seeing reflected in the deep earth the patterns of the stars. It is night, and the horn moon shines brightly. All lights of the vault of heaven are glittering. The air has an extra clarity, for the cold north wind has blown away the clouds, absorbing the mists on its drying breath, leaving the sky serene. The prophet was watching the stars in their courses from the high hill, talking to himself. What means this ray from Mars? Does this new ruddy grow mean a king dead and another to be? I see it so. Constantine has died, and by an evil chance his nephew Conan has seized the crown through the murder of an uncle and his king. Highest Venus, you sail along within your prescribed bounds in company with the sun in its path beneath the zodiac. What know of your twin ray cutting through the ether? Does its division foretell the parting of my love? Such is the ray that speaks of love divided. Perhaps Gwendolina has abandoned me now I am away. Perhaps she is happy in the close embrace of another man. So I lose another Windsor. My rights are taken from me while I linger here. Indeed, a laggard lover loses to the lover who is not a laggard, nor absent but near and urgent. Yet I bear no grudge. She may marry now the time is right, and with my permission enjoy a new husband. When tomorrow dawns, I will go and take with me the present I promised her when I left. The mist comes up and the mist comes down, and we see Merlin riding on a stag, with a herd of stags in a single line, coming also with does and she-goats. And he comes with speed to the place of Gwendolina's wedding. and he and the stags and the groats stand quietly outside the gate and shout, Gwendolina, Gwendolina, come out. What presents are looking for you? Gwendolina comes quickly, all smiles, and astonished to see a man riding a stag and it obeying him. Astonished so many animals of the wild can be brought together, and that he alone was driving them before him, like a shepherd taking sheep to pasture. The bridegroom was standing at a high window, looking in amazement at the rider on his seat, and he laughed mockingly. When the prophet saw him, and in response to the laugh, he wrenched off the horns of the stag he rode, whirled the stag horns round, threw them at the bridegroom, crushing his head, knocking him lifeless, driving his spirit to the winds. In a moment the prophet dug his heels into the stag, set it flying on his way back to the woods. But he went at such a pace that he would have reached the forest unscathed had it not been for a river in his path, for he slips and falls into the fast current. He is pursued by the retainers of Gwendolina, who seize him, bind him, and hand him over to his sister. And once again he is bound in the city. And once again he is gloomy, and once again he is in pain. And Riddach, seeing him losing all cheerfulness, in pity ordered him to be taken into the city among the people in the marketplace, hoping he'll be cheered by the visit and the sight of the various novelties on sale. He was taken out, and on the way from the palace he saw a bald, badly dressed servant in front of the gates. He was the doorman, asking passers-by for money to buy clothes. The prophet stopped and laughed. Further, he sees a young man with new shoes, purchasing leather patches. And once again he laughed. And once again Riddach says to him, explain to me your laughter, and I will let you return to the wood. And Merlin answers, the doorman in front of the gates is sitting in shabby clothes and begging, yet all the time he is secretly rich, for there is a secret hoard of coins under him. So I laughed. Turn up the earth beneath him, you will fair find ancient coins. From there they took me to the marketplace. I saw a man buying shoes. I laughed again, and buying patches to repair and renew them when worn. I laughed again. The poor man would be in no position to use the shoes or fix the patches. He is already drowned and floating in the sea. To see the doorman, and see the doorway, and look underneath the doorway, and you will see the secret hoard. Look to see, and you will see the drowned man on the desolate strand. And between Ganida and between Merlin there is a dialogue. Merlin's pull towards the Caledon, the forest. Ganida's need to hold him in the city. For they are double souls. And out of the great dialogue between them, a strange thing is formed. An observatory through which the stars can be seen in the deepest place of the forest. place of 70 doors and 70 windows. A tower in the deepest place through which the stars are seen. A place where prophecies are made. And Merlin is joined by Ganeda in this place, and they look into the deep places of the universe, into the deep earth, into the deep stars. And as they look, and as they perceive, and as they follow the life route of each being, they find themselves returning to the beginning. To the place of the single point, to the place that where the four winds come from. They follow the weaving of the winds. They follow the weaving of time and space. They follow the shaping of the world. Of the waters, of the dry land, of the creation of lands and islands. They see the history of the land. They see the red shaman of Pebbleland. They see the rich undergrowth, the tropical forests, the place of hyenas and hippopotami and great mammoths. They see the coming of the ice and the retreating of the ice. They see the emergence of tribe upon tribe, the coming of the Romans and the leaving of the Romans. They see the Rome, they see the baths of Bladud. They see the burial place of Clear. They see the island of apples, the place where the nine sisters live. The place of healing. They see the death of Arthur, coming of Arthur and the death of Arthur. They see Berinthus, the steersman, and the return of Arthur to Avalon. They see all things. They see us here and now. See Ganeda, see Merlin, be seen by Ganeda, be seen by Merlin. Anoki Merlin, Anoki Ganeda, Anoki I and you. See and be seen, just here, just now.